Happy Valentine's Day, Laura Lee.
Oh, thank you. Happy Valentine's Day to you, Charles.
Yes. I miss having those Valentine's Day cards in elementary school, of all things, right? Like, I don't know if you've ever had that, like, where you'd have the bags lined up and everyone would pick out their Valentine's.
With those little chalky hearts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, has your husband given you any sort of like Valentine's Day card? How do you do Valentine's Day? Is it just going to be another Tuesday this year?
Well, it depends. This year, I think we're going to do something special because I have a special something for him. So he doesn't know it, but he's going to get a Valentine's Day surprise.
Ooh. Well, hopefully we won't spoil it. And since you know, say special occasions, I should mention you are a guest host this episode. So tell everyone what you do at UMB.
Yes. So I work in the Office of Communications and Public Affairs, and I am a media relations specialist.
And you cover what schools and areas?
I cover the law school, the School of Dentistry, and the biopark.
Well, you're going to get to know another school today, the School of Social Work. We bring up Valentine's Day because this is a bonus episode talking about in-law relationships, about the healthy ties between Black father-in-laws and sons-in-laws, as an offshoot of our regular episode. Earlier this month, Dana, Jenna, and I talked to University of Maryland School of Social Work professors Jeff Greif and Michael Woolley about how couples on their way to getting married should know some tips about their soon-to-be in-laws. And if you're an in-law, what should you do to help foster a strong relationship?
So not every marriage is the same, right? Isn't that the same?
I think so.
Jeff and Michael shared the nuances for a wide range of in-law relationships, but there's another study that examines the healthy bonds between Black fathers-in-law and sons-in-law.
University of Maryland School of Social Work Assistant Professor Erica Lewis and Baylor University Diana R. Garland School of Social Work Assistant Professor Brianna Lemons are the authors of the study, The Ties That Bind, an exploration of son-in-law and father-in-law of relationships in Black families. Michael Woolley is also a co-author of that study, which you will find a link to in our show notes. Dr. Lewis and Dr. Lemons will help share some advice and lessons to help Black families strengthen those ties.
You're listening to the heartbeat of the University of Maryland, Baltimore, the UMB Pulse.
Erica Lewis and Brianna Lemons, great to see you again.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yes, good to see you too.
Both of us know a little bit about each other when I did media relations for the University of Maryland School of Social Work. And this is a great topic to revisit again. It's Valentine's Day. But before we get to know about couples and in-laws, tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you two know each other, being from different institutions.
Dr. Lewis and I met during our doctoral studies. So I was a student at Howard University, and I believe Dr. Lewis at Georgia State, correct?
Washington University.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we were both in our doctoral studies and had done a fellowship through the Chafin Hall at the University of Chicago. We were both fellows in their child well-being fellowship. And so that's how we met. And we found this commonality in our passion and interest for doing fatherhood work. And so that's where our relationship began.
We're going to be talking about father-in-law and son-in-law relationships, but your research is overall focused on fathers. Why focus on dads?
There's so many reasons. But for us, we focus on dads because they are part of the family system and they really do make such a great impact on the family and the outcomes. And so what Brianna and I found was that fathers, as we were, you know, studying family systems, that fathers were not talked about as much as we thought they should be, especially from our experiences with our own fathers. And we weren't seeing it in the literature and we wondered why. A lot of our studies have really focused on highlighting the contributions that fathers bring to children and families.
And I'll just add to that by saying that this work for me is very personal. And it really comes from a strengths-based perspective. It comes from the positive experiences that I've had with my father and the ways in which he has shaped me into the woman that I've become today. But I also saw him struggle in his role as a father to my non-resident siblings. So the siblings that didn't live in the home with us. I knew his story and I knew that there were so many other men out there like him. And so a lot of what I seek to do in my work, in addition to what Dr. Lewis has shared, is really to change the narrative on Black fathers in particular, and providing them with a space to share their stories and uplift their voices in the family literature.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. And when we last talked a couple of years ago about this research, Erica, you said that you thought that the relationships were interesting, the in-law relationships were interesting because of the Black family dynamic. Can you describe what those dynamics are? And then I guess I'm sure they tie into the fatherhood aspect too.
Right. Well, I'd first like to say that there's a lot of diversity and fluidity within the Black family structure, right? But there were, as we were looking at the study or as we were analyzing the data, there was a few dynamics that really stood out for us. One was this idea around rituals and gatherings and how important they were. So it was around this idea of including people in the families and celebrations. So weddings, the birth of a child, any type of gathering in that nature was really important. Another idea around this, around Black family dynamics was the values and the principles that are inherent among family members and generations. So having respect for folks who are older than you, so your elders, the sense of having a responsibility for your families, being a provider and a protector. And I think the last piece was around this idea that it really does take a village approach, where people, family members were expected to help one another out and exchange resources so that, you know, families were better off in the end.
Just as an anecdote, that I was going back to what Dr. Lewis just shared about the centrality of culture and the importance of culture and the diversity within Black families. And I think in this study, we intentionally use the word Black because it's more inclusive. We actually had a couple of participants in our study from Africa, so one from Eritrea and the other from Rwanda. And then the rest of our sample was from within the U.S. And so I think I really just want to make clear for listeners the importance of culture in all of this. And just one anecdote, I was talking with a friend recently who's from Mali, and I was talking with her about the podcast today and what I was preparing for. And she said to me, well, in African families, you know, it's expected that the in-law lives with the family. So in her family, her mother lives with her brother and his wife, and her brother has been tasked with taking care of the mother. And so in that context, it's expected. And so I think it's important as we talk about in-law relationships to recognize the importance and the centrality of culture in all of this.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because, you know, we hear about other cultures where there's multi-generations sometimes in a household, and you don't expect that or find that traditionally in American households. And I just kind of wonder through those examples of where they're used to having either multi-generations in there and then the in-laws at some point, if that created any sort of extra pressure of having to live with your in-laws.
Yeah, there were a few fathers in the study who talked about having. So, for instance, there was one father or son-in-law who talked about having the father-in-law move in with him and his wife, and how, you know, of course, it was something that was expected. You take care of the father-in-law, you take care of your elder, but the father-in-law was very he had a lot of opinions on how the family should run and how the household should run. And so the son-in-law was having issues trying to balance that respect for the elder versus, you know, this is my house. These are my rules. You're a guest.
Wow.
So yeah, it was so interesting to read the interviews and hear the interviews, because they were also audio recorded. So it was interesting to hear all of that.
Just as a follow-up, we were talking about the difference, the cultural differences within the Black community. How is the Black father, son-in-law experience different maybe than from Charles called it the American experience, but maybe it's the, could we also call it maybe the white experience? And it's broad, but are there differences that you can point out?
So I think it's important to first say that there were some commonalities between white in-laws and Black in-laws, but there were also a few differences. And I think really for us, the focus was trying to figure out the role of culture and how it played in the family relationship. Because as Brianna was saying earlier, culture is so important, especially in the Black community. And so if I'm looking for differences, I think there was something around rituals that was really important. So again, the weddings, the birth of children that really changed the relationship for the better for the Black fathers and son-in-laws in our study that we did not find in the white father-in-laws and son-in-laws, and not to that extent, the same extent. When Black father-in-laws and son-in-laws were asked about, you know, when did your relationship change for the better? It was usually around these events where people are added to the family, where you're gaining family, whether it be through weddings or birth. And that was a major difference.
I would add to that this whole issue of respect mm-hmm. is very big among Black men in particular. I think some of that could come from a biblical standpoint in terms of what the Bible has to say about the role of men and women in families and the importance of respect and the wife respecting the husband. That comes from a biblical basis. And so I think because of the role of spirituality in Black families, this could be something that's very central and very, very specific that we find within Black families. Because I listened to the interview with Dr. Grief and Dr. Woolley, and I didn't hear as much conversation on this whole issue of respect. In addition to that, I think that one of the major themes in our paper was validation, this need for validation. And oftentimes that need for validation came from the women in the family. So the women in the family were often the ones to shepherd the son-in-law in and say, hey, he's a good guy. Like, he's good people, you know? And so that was really, really important for sort of the father-in-law kind of checking the box and saying, like, you're good, you're okay, you know? So I think that was also something that really stood out in our work as well that I don't see in more American family kinds of studies.
I did want to add one thing around this role of provider and protector. And I think that was a theme that came up a lot, specifically to the Black father-in-laws and son-in-laws. And I wonder if discrimination, racism had something to do with this idea of, for father-in-laws, if I am giving the okay for you to come into the family, son-in-law, I need to know that you're going to be able to provide for my daughter, but also protect her from the outside world. And we saw that quite a bit in the interviews that we didn't see as much with white father-in-laws and son-in-laws.
Can you touch on a little bit more about that with the importance of protection? And you mentioned some of those underlying themes, but to educate everyone a little bit more about the importance of that role.
I think that relationship that exists between the daughter and the father is something that I think oftentimes father-in-laws expect to maintain. And I think oftentimes when they give their daughters away, they look at it as though, okay, now you're in charge. You know, now you are responsible for protecting my daughter. This has been my role her entire life. And so now I am giving her away to you. And so that giving away that happens during the marriage ceremony is symbolic for you're the provider now, you're the protector now. And so I have these expectations as your father-in-law that you will continue to carry on the role that I've played in my daughter's life for her entire life.
Right. And it was interesting because it was even with father-in-laws who didn't have the best relationship with their daughters, they still had the expectation that son-in-laws would be the provider, be the protector, you know, from the outside world. And I think it kind of goes back to this idea of Black family dynamics and the importance of family, right? And the importance of your family being your safe space. So whatever is happening out in the world, that you can come back to your family, you have them as a support system, and they'll shelter you, or they're almost act as a buffer from what you may experience as a person of color out in the world. And so that was something that kept ringing true. Will you be able to be that buffer, be that protection for my daughter?
I think that stems from larger, you know, cultural ideals in terms of what the role of the man is in the family. You know, we know that men have pressures to provide in ways that women often do not. And I think that the role of provider is even more pressure there when it comes to men of color, oftentimes, because we know the structural inequities that often exist in society that don't allow Black men to provide for their families in the same ways that other men are able to. So I think that pressure of being a provider is it comes from this larger cultural dynamic, but then it's also an additional added pressure when we look at fathers of color.
And going back to culture again, so your study was based on the Afrocentric, I want to make sure I get this right, the Afrocentric intergeneration solidarity model. Could you kind of explain what that is for those of us who are not deep into the world of social work and how it informed your study?
There's an original model that is the intergenerational solidarity model, which looks at how relationships are formed by family members across generations. And so the Afrocentric model that was actually developed by a scholar, Dr. Waits, really looks specifically at Black culture, Black principles, Black values, and it infuses it with the intergenerational solidarity model. I love music. I almost see it as a remix, right? It's taking a little bit of the original, but then adding something extra, an extra beat, if you will, maybe an additional artist. And so it, you know, again, those solidarity principles also have this, this focus on Afrocentric value. So this idea of collectivism, the idea of roles and responsibilities, the respect for the elders, these are pieces that were added in to the model to make it it yields like richer understanding of the Black experience when thinking about, you know, relationships across generations.
Going back to the study a little bit more, in your study, you interviewed Black married men ranging in ages from 29 to 52, with participants being married from 4 to 17 years. That's a wide range of experience. So what does it mean to be a good father-in-law or a good son-in-law? And what are the main takeaways from your work?
I think that part of what it means to be a good father-in-law or son-in-law, and this kind of touches on some of the advice as well, and some of the major themes that we found in the study, is being intentional, being willing to extend the olive branch. We found that intentionality is a foundational aspect of the relationship building process between male in-laws. Son-in-laws expressed that making intentional efforts to engage in collective activities and provide mutual support was vital to building a relationship with their fathers. Father-in-laws, rather. So I think part of it is being intentional. It's being willing to be vulnerable in your relationship with your father-in-law or the father-in-law's relationship with the son-in-law. I think it's being open to that relationship building process and realizing that it's not going to be a given. It's something that has to be built over time. So many families are impacted and families come together through the in-law relationship. When individuals get married, several families are merged together. And so understanding how that merging happens and being willing to go through the necessary process of building those relationships and understanding that it takes time for those things to happen, I think is a part of what it means to be a good father-in-law or son-in-law, just being open. One of the things that I really enjoyed about doing this study is that it's a very understudied relationship, and it's a very ambiguous one. And so I empathize with all in-laws trying to make these relationships work. And you know, it's not clear. This is one of the relationships in the American family that we just don't really talk about very much. And so nobody really knows what to do, when to do, and how to do. And so I think it's just understanding that and being open to what the relationship can look like and can be.
Going back to what you mentioned about expectations, I can imagine that has to be a little bit of anxiety inducing for the son-in-law. So, and the son-in-law probably has a lot of things that he wants to get off his chest too. So with those expectations, are they really good about communicating what they expect on both ends, especially the, you know, the son-in-law being brave enough to tell the father-in-law, like, hey, this is what, you know, I'm hoping to do here?
Yeah, if I can recall correctly, and certainly Dr. Lewis weigh in on this, but I think communication was a major issue in our study. I think that both sides, father-in-law and son-in-law, had expectations of one another, but many of them were unspoken ones. And so I think that that often created a rift there because they, you know, for example, son-in-laws often desire to have an emotional connection. There was an expectation of an emotional connection from the son-in-law, but that was not always necessarily communicated. And this was in particular when the son-in-law did not have a relationship with his own father. And so one of the things that stood out to me in the interview that you all did with Dr. Greif and Dr. Woolley is that oftentimes with these in-law relationships, sometimes they can fulfill a long unmet need. And in this case, the unmet need is, I've never had a father in my life. I would love for you to be that father figure to me. I just don't know how to tell you that, right? And so I think that that was often the scenario in many of these men's lives.
Yeah, that's tough. That is tough. So did they share any advice as far as, you know, for the ones that were able to make that breakthrough about, you know, this is how I mustered up the courage, or maybe we did something. You mentioned how like activities were a big part of it. Maybe that set the scene to have the conversation.
It wasn't, I think there was this idea of just being patient, waiting for father-in-laws to come around, and sometimes adjusting expectations. So they knew, for instance, son-in-laws talked about just having more opportunities to do things that they both like to do. And from there would be natural conversations that happen, and they would be able to bond. And so that was something that was helpful. But also son-in-laws understood the generational differences, and that their father-in-laws came from a generation where you have a set number of friends, and you have a very tight circle, and those are the people that you communicate with, and you don't open yourself up necessarily or so easily to other people. And so son-in-laws talked about being patient through that process. And so just trying to find opportunities where they can connect with their father-in-laws was really important, which I think is something that still rings true. I was, you know, talking about the study with my brother-in-law and asked him, like, how was it to do these things make sense? Or did you also have these same hiccups when trying to get to know my father? And he definitely said yes. You know, my father is a listener and not so much of a talker. And so he could be saying a lot of things with his face, but you're not getting a full monologue from him. You're not going to get a long-winded story, but he's fully engaged. And so understanding that that is a connection, even if it's not what, say, my brother-in-law would expect from his time with his friends or his communication pattern with his friends. So it's really interesting seeing some of the findings in the study ringing true in family settings.
So you talk about son-in-laws sitting back and being patient and waiting for an older generation who maybe doesn't communicate the same way to come around. Is there any other kind of advice that you can give to father-in-laws and son-in-laws to help improve their relationships that you found from your work?
So I would say one of the things that can be done is to start to build these relationships early. Oftentimes, these relationships don't really start to come together until maybe a child is born or a problem arises or there's a financial need or the case may be. But I think as early, even in the dating phase, you know, as early as possible, because one of our biggest themes was understanding values and expectations, because oftentimes unmet expectations lead to frustration. And so I think it's important to understand from the very beginning, what does my father-in-law value? What does he expect, right? So one of the things that came up in, again, and I keep referencing the Greif and Woolley interview, but one of the things that they mentioned that really stood out to me is to be curious about your in-law. right? So they are the ones who raise the person that you're in love with. They really encourage, you know, starting early, being curious, creating a personalized relationship. And I think that's also important is like, I'm not just hanging out with you because I'm married to your daughter. I'm hanging out with you because I really like you. And really like, you know, wanting to have that personal relationship. Like, this is the relationship that I am choosing to enter into, that I am choosing to have, that is separate and apart from my daughter. I genuinely want to get to know you. I'm not just engaging with you because my wife says, if I don't engage with you, I'm going to be on the couch tonight. You know, like I really want this relationship. So I think that's very important as well, is starting early, being curious, getting to know each other's values and expectations, those that are spoken and unspoken.
The only other thing I would add is this idea of validation. So because being present and other folks, maybe even singing your praises, can help build that relationship sooner. You know, having son-in-laws go to family gatherings, go to have these opportunities to be with the family as a whole, so that other family members can see how invested the son-in-law is. And, you know, word gets around that this person's in it for the long haul, and that can help bring the father-in-law around and really start that relationship bonding a little sooner.
It sounds like you have to start with the mother-in-law. You have to make sure that she likes you, and then she goes and talks to her husband.
And other family members, but yes. Yeah, definitely the mother-in-law does not hurt. Having her on board as a constant sense of validation is a great approach.
The woman is still the gatekeeper in many ways in families. I found similar things in my work on other topics related to co-parenting and things of that nature, where women were the gatekeeper. If there was a problem in the family that was going on where the father wasn't getting along with the child's mother, it was usually the maternal mother that bridged that gap, that was able to stand in the gap and say, okay, I'm going to be the mediator. I'm going to bring you two together. I'm going to make sure that each of you gets to spend the time with the children. So oftentimes that is the case in Black families in particular. The women play a huge role in maintaining a positive family dynamic.
And that's interesting that you bring that up, because the study centers on the healthy bonds between the fathers and sons-in-laws. And I was wondering if you were going into the research expecting to hear a lot about the mother-in-law's role and to maintain those bonds.
I didn't expect it. So it was a pleasant surprise. But once I started reading the transcripts, I was like, you know what? This makes sense. I could see it. I definitely could see it in my own, in my personal relationships, as well as just what was seen in the stories through the data. So I was pleasantly surprised.
Me too. Same. I expected it, actually, just because of, you know, other work that I've done where I've, you know, come to understand the vital role of women in families. And like Dr. Lewis said, I've, in my own personal experience, I've seen this and know this to be true. I was not surprised, but I was glad to see this particular theme surface.
Great. You brought this up a couple of times, and it's also could be a signal of being in it for the long haul, but children, when a child gets added to the family, now the mother-in-law is a grandmother, you have a grandfather. So how does that really change the dynamics of those bonds? And you know, is it, again, I'm going back to expectations.
Well, I definitely think that grandparents, so father-in-laws, are needed more. It could be for advice, because oftentimes son-in-laws, this is a new role for them being a parent. And so being able to go to their father-in-law, if they have that relationship, to ask for advice. Also around just asking for help with childcare, or even sometimes financial help. Can they borrow money? Can they help out with certain things around the house that are needed? And so children, it feels like children are a really great opportunity for father-in-laws and son-in-laws to bond, because they definitely have that in common outside of the daughter. There's more opportunities for this social fathering, where father-in-laws can really be a mentor and an elder to give advice to son-in-laws. And son-in-laws seem to, from our study, be more willing to take advice about parenting versus anything else. That can really be an area for the relationship to build or an opportunity.
That's interesting. Why do you think that is, that they're more receptive to the parenting advice?
Maybe it's because there is this new role. Maybe son-in-laws, if they're new fathers, they're not expected to know it all, but they'd like to hear from the experiences of their father-in-law. That's what I'm thinking, is that it's a new experience. Maybe there's something around masculinity, like asking, you know, your father-in-law how to be a better husband is a bit more, it makes you a bit more vulnerable than asking about a caretaking or this role of being a provider and a protector, which is something that Black men in our study, and I think in other parts of culture, can, it's expected. So that's something that I can't ask for advice and I won't be seen as less than.
I'm curious to know, from your study, who, the father-in-law or the son-in-law, who was the most interested in cultivating a relationship, or what, did it go both ways? Was it the son-in-laws who were wanted their, you know, father-in-law's approval, or was it the father-in-law who wanted to get to know the son-in-law, or was it equal?
If I can recall correctly, I think it was more of the son-in-law who desired to have the relationship with the father-in-law. And it was almost kind of like the father-in-law was sitting back waiting and saying, like, you know, I'm going to wait on you to come to me, or I'm going to wait on you to build this relationship with me. So I think it was more of the son-in-law that desired to have that relationship. And because the father-in-law, in some cases, was not as proactive, the son-in-laws kind of felt like there was a struggle there. And so I think it was definitely more initiative being taken by the son-in-law.
Right. I agree.
Let's say this is the month of love with Valentine's Day. You're getting pretty serious, maybe thinking engagement. If you're that future, you know, son-in-law, how do you make that kind of first contact, or maybe increase contact and relationship with that future father-in-law? What maybe are some pieces of advice to help open up that dialogue?
I think it's around these family activities or traditions. So looking for those celebrations to be a part of those gatherings is really important. And then this idea of shared activities. So even finding out from the spouse or the wife, or, you know, potential wife, what their father likes to do. Then the son-in-law can invite the father-in-law to share in fishing, you know, fixing things around the house, maybe a basketball game, music. So things of that nature, where they can at least start out participating in an activity that they both would find enjoyable, and then building from there.
Yeah, I seem to recall that in your work, you mentioned that a son-in-law said he learned a lot about his father-in-law when they played cards together. You know, finding those kind of things that they can do together that they both enjoy.
Yeah, you can find a lot out about people in general from cards. I think spades will teach you a lot about people. Yeah.
Do you have any other anecdotes? I remember one that I put in my story about how one man said they went to a comedy show together, and, you know, his father-in-law had tears in his eyes from just crying so hard. And he's like, I've never seen that side of him before. And it just, you know, just changed things. You know, what other types of, like, stories like that have you heard?
There was a father or a son-in-law who talked about his father-in-law being promoted at work. And so attending that celebration and seeing his father-in-law so excited, so proud to have this accomplishment, but also to show him off and introduce him as his son-in-law, was something that was pivotal.
And I'll just add to that and say, I think overall, one of the takeaways is building a relationship in a low stakes, low pressure kind of environment that feels organic and that feels genuine, I think is the key, because I think these things happen over time and you get to know people over time, and it's not forced. It's something where both men, because we are talking about men, and we know that men express themselves in different ways than women and have needs that are different than women. And I think what's important many times for men is that it isn't forced and that it's natural. And that they're able to develop that bond in their own way and on their own terms, and not simply because there's a marriage or because there's an expectation from, you know, someone external to that relationship, but that they're able to just build it naturally and in a way that feels genuine.
Have you heard some of the responses from your participants? Did any of them resonate with you? Did you think for any of those answers, oh, I need to share this with my, you know, my girlfriends, or I could use this in my own relationship?
I think one thing that stood out was the importance of building the relationship for son-in-laws. A lot of it had to do with possibly strengthening their relationship with their wife or their spouse. And so even when the father-in-law wasn't as receptive, even when the father-in-law and the son in, or the father-in-law and the daughter didn't have the greatest relationship, son-in-law still made that effort to connect with their father-in-laws, because if they could help bridge that gap between the daughter and the father-in-law, that their relationship with their significant other would improve. And I found that really interesting for so many reasons, but you know, mainly because they can see how relationships between children and parents, how that can impact other relationships with people. And so it's important to, when thinking in this family setting, to try to strengthen relationships in every place that makes sense, in every place that is possible. So that was really interesting.
I think overall for me, I, through doing this study, I came to understand how important the in-law relationship is for strengthening Black families. In general, it's an opportunity, right, for father-in-laws to model for their son-in-laws what fathering looks like, what being a husband looks like. It's a context in which healthy family development can take place, and understanding how the family dynamic changes when all of these families are merged. And there was another powerful thing that came up in the interview with Dr. Grief and Dr. Woolley, which is that when we enter into in-law relationships, we're not entering them alone. We're entering in and we're merging the father's family with the son-in-law's family with the daughter's family, with the new family that they're creating together. And not only that, but each person is bringing into that relationship their own family dynamic and trajectory and from their family of origin. And so that's a very powerful thing to see all of these different dynamics colliding at once and learning how to navigate that. And so I think that just the in-law relationship itself is really one that the power of it is not fully understood in terms of what it can bring and what it can do for the strengthening of families across generations.
Yeah, that's, think about like holiday traditions, right? That families have, and just that debate of like, all right, who's hosting Christmas? Are we visiting your in-laws or mine first? Simple things like that can turn into a mess if someone's really passionate about the family traditions and who's showing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with all your findings with the in-law research and how much you're finding about like the father's roles, we mentioned at the top about your father-focused research. So has this informed or helped your other research that you're looking at for those father relationships?
It has. So Brianna and I, when it works together forever, I'm going to speak for both of us. And so we looked for these opportunities to really integrate what we found in this study and other studies. One study now that we're working on is looking at how to better involve fathers in their child's academic outcomes. And so what are the barriers and facilitators for fathers to engage in that type of support? And one thing that we wanted to understand are what are the supports for fathers? And one thing we think that we'll be finding is having support from in-laws, having support from elders, and folks of that nature to help then increase that engagement. And so we're just looking for opportunities where supports for fathers include intergenerational aspects, whether they be father-in-laws or fathers, grandfathers, or other family members, because support systems are really important, especially in Black families.
And I'll just add to that and say that through doing this work, I became really inspired to continue along this line. This is the first time that I've ever done a study of this nature. And it just didn't occur to me how understudied the in-law relationship is until I did this. So it's really inspired me to do more work in this area. And we didn't pull out as many cultural themes as I would have wanted to, and that I think are probably there and that we hadn't quite tapped because our sample size was 11. I think that if we had continued to sample and our sample size was larger, I think that those cultural nuances would have showed up in such in a much richer way. I really want to go more in depth with this. And I think we need more ethnographic research, which would allow for more in-depth, long-term immersion into a culture to really understand these cultural nuances. Because after doing this, I'm convinced that culture plays a major, major role here. And so I would love to do further work on other cultures, the African culture, all Black families throughout the African diaspora, right? Because there are so many differences and nuances there. We are such a diverse group of people. I think it's important to study with in-group differences as it relates to the in-law relationship.
I definitely look forward to that study. Hopefully, you know, you have many more published works to come on this.
Dr. Lewis and Dr. Lemons, I just want to thank you so much for this incredible journey through the Black family experience. And we look forward to hearing more about your research in the future.
Thank you. This is wonderful.
Thank you.
The UMB Pulse with Charles Chalet, Dana Rampola, and Jenna Frick is a UMB Office of Communications and Public Affairs production. Edited by Charles Chalet, sound engineering by Jenna Frick, marketing by Dana Rampola.